You're listening to the best of Babbittville 2016. And remember, endurance lives here.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U, by EverySite.com, the coolest new technology around, by RunCatalina.com, Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th, by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. Our next guest, without a doubt, the greatest coach in the sport of triathlon, probably in triathlon history. Three Olympic medals, 16 world championships, 69 Ironman 70.3 championships, 75 Ironman titles. When you hear the names, Chrissy Wellington, Nicola Spierig, Emma Snowsill, Daniela Reif, all of those athletes work with Mr. Brett Sutton. Coach, how are you?
Well, I'm very humble at the moment with that introduction. Thank you very much, Bob.
Well, you deserve all of that and more. I really appreciate what you've done for the sport. And when you have an athlete, what I love is someone like a Chrissy Wellington comes to you, and she comes to you as an ITU hopeful, correct?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
So she comes to you as an ITU athlete, and you see something in her probably long before she saw it. What did you see in her that made you believe, okay, she would be better at this longer distance?
Well, there was three parts to that equation. And the first part was her bike skills straight away were not up to the standard of the ITU racing. And, you know, Chrissy was a complex person. She was in a hurry. She was looking at the Beijing Olympics. And her possible best hope was to look at 212. So she was from the workforce. She was out of it. She was somebody that was asking, do you think I could be a professional athlete? And then, you know, I want to win the Olympic gold medal in 2008. Now, as you noticed in the wrap-up, I knew Emma Snowsill. And at that stage, I was training. Nicola Spierig just started with me just a bit beforehand. So I knew the levels that was needed. And I just knew, without being degrading to Chrissy's levels, she needed at least 2 or 3 years on the bike to learn the skills and the capabilities of the ITU type of racing. In saying that, that was number one. Number two is straight away, you could see she was an extremely strong woman. And I give her, over that particular week, 3 or 4 tests that I would give, again, people that I had win Ironman do. She handled it without even cracking a sweat. So straight away, I was, you know, used my experience to say, wow, this is something special. And to be honest with you, I did see her in Lausanne before she came over, you know, tear apart the bike course in the age group world championship. And so, you know, you put the three things together and you try to do what's best for the athlete. And for me, I sort of like what we did with Daniela. I could see that this is somebody that's quite special. And, you know, if I was given enough time, we could turn her into the pro athlete that she wanted to be.
When you mentioned Daniela had been to 2 Olympic Games. I think she was 7th and 40th or something like that in the 2 Olympic Games. So at that point, and she's at still thinking that she wants to do another Olympics, she's becomes the, at this point in time, probably the greatest 70.3 racer there is and an Ironman world champion. Again, that transition from I'm focusing on the Olympics, I want to go back to the Olympics, to all of a sudden I'm the best in the world at this longer distance.
Well, I think Danny herself alluded to the fact that I'd watched Daddy for a long period of time. As I said, I trained Nicola, so I was living in Switzerland. So I seen Danny ascend up the ranks of ITU. And I was of the opinion that she had a fantastic race, which was the opposite to some other people. You know, they kept saying after her race at the earlier Olympics.
Oh, in Athens?
That, you know, so from there you can go up. Now, as a coach, I have to make opinions. And I know at that stage, because I was training Nicola, that I thought Danny had the greatest race short course that she ever had. Now, my thoughts were, and I told them to Nicola at that stage, I said, I think this kid could win Kona. And I said that because I said to Nicola, I said, there's only one of three people in the ITU that I think could win Kona, and one of them's Nicola. And so the fact is, she was a little taken back when I said, you know, I think Daniela has that ability. And so, you know, Danny at that stage went into a bit of a lull because she went looking for the extra 2% that, you know, everybody said, if you can find this, you can go to the podium at the next Olympics. Again, coaches have to make decisions. And in my mind, I didn't think she could go any higher than what she did in that type of racing. So basically, it was my opinion that she had a fantastic race, and that was her level at the ITU. Now, you know, from the moment I laid eyes on her, I know how strong she bike rides. And so it was always in my back of my mind that if ever we cross paths, that I think she was potentially a great Ironman athlete.
So you weren't surprised when she, you know, when she won Ironman Switzerland, and then obviously focusing on Ironman 70.3 Worlds, won 70.3 Worlds the year before last. That was the goal, was to win 70.3 Worlds. But when she I think she told me that on Wednesday of race week, it was like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we have you jump into Ironman Switzerland? long as you're going to be racing the 5150 on Saturday, what the heck?
Yes. Exactly. So it saved us a train fare, and it was honestly in my mind that, you know, we talked about the great Chrissy. I looked at her, and all I could see was Chrissy Wellington with a better swim.
Right.
And so I took a punt. To be honest with you, I thought, if I was to try to get her ready for Kona, and it's the same story as Chrissy again.
Yes.
I only took Chrissy to Kona because I thought that bike course would suit her better than any other one. It was one with less mechanics in it.
Right.
She needed, you know, less ability to actually steer a bike around corners. And so, you know, it wasn't method in the madness with Chrissy. We went there because I thought Kona would suit her more than any other Ironman in the world. So we tried to qualify and then get her to the race that I thought suited her. And, of course, looking at Danny Power down the road, you know, pushing gears that, you know, girls just don't do, all I could think of was, you know, if I think I could get her to Kona this year, you know, if she bought into it, which is a hard thing because Danny wasn't an Ironman, never thought about it, told me on February, which, you know, it was one of her problems. She said, I'll never do an Ironman. And straight away, from a coaching perspective, I thought, you know what? You can't tell me what you can and can't do. If I'm going to get the best out of you, you've got to be a believer in what I'm telling you. And so basically, I'd set my mind straight after she told me that we were going to do an Ironman somewhere. It's just her training was so good. I thought, you know, I really think this girl would be on fire at Kona this year. And being an old horse trainer, you know, when the athletes are not injured and things are going well, you've got to take it. You know, I find that happens too much in triathlon. Everybody's putting stuff off because, oh, I'm going to do this next year and do that the year after. And my experience tells me if it's going well now, use it. So we both talked about it. We joked about it. And then she said, you're serious, aren't you? I said, I'm very serious. And she said, well, I want to do the 5150. And I said, well, how's this for crazy? If you do the 5150, do the Ironman after it, and then we'll see whether you can stay. And if you can't, no problems, there's no harm, no foul, your race hasn't been knocked around, we'll concentrate on going to Wiesbaden for the European Championships, and then we'll move on and do the race, I think it was at Mount Tremblant.
Yes,
and we'll forget about my crazy idea about going to Kona. And so we shook on it. She went and spifflicated the short race with an amazing bike split. And then at the 90K in the bike ride, when she was basically she'd lost 9 minutes on the way because she said, I can't pace it. I don't know what I'm doing, as she was going up Heartbreak Hill. Well, I ran up the Heartbreak Hill with her and had a few choice words in her ear. And then she put 10 minutes in with the next 90K on the bike, and an Iron Man was born. And that's what basically happened, you know. So it was a very surreal moment. And from there, what we did, Bob, was I didn't want to knock her confidence. We'd always set Mount Tremblant as our goal. And so we aimed up at that and decided to get another long ride in before that. We went and did another Ironman, only because she hadn't ridden 180K. She'd done it once. And I said to her that, you know, we'll go to Mount Tremblant and then we'll go to Kona and have some fun and see how it goes. And, well, we've all seen how it's went. She's been terrific, yeah.
Well, and then if you look at this last year, where probably one of the greatest seasons any triathlete's ever had, when you win, you know, you win Frankfurt, you win Kona, you win 70.3 Worlds, you win the Triple Crown, which is $1 million. Did you have a sense going into this last year? Because when she went to Mount Tremblant the year before, the whole season was built around that, and Kona was whatever happens. You weren't focused on winning Kona, and the fact that she took second and led for a big chunk of that race, I'm sure it was like, hey, that we did exactly what we wanted to do. Next year we can focus on winning the big one.
Well, yeah, for sure. I thought she had a magnificent race.
She did.
She had equally the best debut that anybody's ever had at Kona, you know. I think Chrissy's race at Kona was magnificent, but it was no greater than hers. And different circumstances, she might have been called the winner. So, for me, I just, I thought it was great. But, Bob, I've got the advantage of, as you said, in the startup. I've got a lot of good athletes training. I watch them every day. And she was hitting numbers, the subtle numbers that made my eyes twinkle. You know, you just know when you're seeing somebody ride like she was riding at training. Her swim, we did a complete lobotomy on the swim when she first came into place, only because I'm an ex-swim coach, and I looked at what she was doing and I didn't think it suited her. And then straight away it all just clicked, so we changed it, and then all of a sudden the bike grew because she stopped using her legs in the water, and she was much fresher out of the water, and then everything just went from there. You know, the strength that we always knew she had was just being allowed to play out. And then as she built her confidence, she got better and better and better. And, you know, Danny's a very formidable racer. And one of the great strengths is, you know, I can give her a game plan. And let me tell you, you know, she just executes it totally. And it doesn't matter what happens, if things go wrong or whatever, she doesn't panic and she doesn't get thrown off that game plan. So she's a very, very good racer. And so, you know, I can't say I was surprised, because it was like Chrissy. You know, Chrissy never would have went to Kona if I didn't see what she was doing on the training track. And I compared it to other, you know, great athletes I had. So obviously coming after Chrissy was not just Danny is a great athlete. You know, Zena, Carolyn Steffen, fantastic athlete. And so I had the... And to Danny's luck, I suppose, we had a path already, you know, made out, you know, and painted. The yellow brick line went to Kona, and we knew the numbers that you needed to do, and Danny just kept throwing them up every day.
When I look at it, the great athletes you've worked with, one thing that sticks out, obviously, is a lot of great women. Are women just better, are more coachable than guys?
Well, it's funny. I talked to one of my coaches the other day who knows a bit of history, and that's what happens in our sport. Back in the, maybe you remember, because you've got more history than me in the sport, that through the 90s, I was known as a men's coach. You know, there's world, you can look at the ITU records where we've had the trifecta at the ITU racing with Greg Bennett, Andrew Johns, Craig Walton, your old mate, Welshy.
Yep.
And so people of this generation don't understand that generation, and so they don't know that the backbone of what we're doing now is built on the back of men's results. So I understand that, and circumstances change. I think at the present moment, I train one pro man, and I'm helping Lucas for you guys, foundation to try to piece him back together again. And now, you know, as I got older, I've got a new family, so our group, the pro group, has been smaller on purpose. And so, it's just that I have girls in the squad at the present moment. So from my perspective, I never get involved in that because, you know, I actually have got the scrapbook at home that reminds me of we used to have great success with men as well.
Exactly. Now, your background with being a boxing coach, being a greyhound trainer, racehorse trainer, what did you take from those things to what you're doing now?
Well, I think it's our biggest advantage, and it's hard to say that in the sport because it allows me to understand that the simplistic things work the best. It's always very complicated to make things sound simple, but it's got to be simple. And we basically base our training regimes on doing the little things correctly and keeping it simple. We don't get too complicated and try to basically fill the athletes' heads with stuff that, you know, on the race day, when they're under pressure, they need to be considering other things. So for me, when you're dealing with that type of training of an animal, you have to have huge observational skills, which I think is one of the things that separates me from a lot of others. And you have to have patience because you can't talk to them. And then you've got to keep it simple. They have to know the instructions. They learn rote style. So then they know step one, steps two, steps three. Now, all I do is take that across and use it exactly the same in our athletic endeavors with the humans. And it simplifies things. It clears people's heads, like Danny at some stage got very lost her confidence. You know, we've always pointed out, and I've always pointed out, that Danny's a terrific athlete. You know, I mean, short course too. Anybody wants to, who wants to challenge me on anyone with any athlete in the world, I can tell you, if they want to go two out, I don't care if they want to do a 200 swim, 10K bike and 2K run, she's very, very good. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
She was a good athlete that just, you know, lost her confidence, got sick, and then made everything complicated. So, you know, the one thing that we did with her was we paired her training right back to nothing and said, okay, we're rebuilding the engine just as you would a car if you had a problem with it. You pull it all out together. We said we can improve your swim by changing this, that, and whatever. And, Danny, I need you to buy into it. You know, you can either take 18 months to get the confidence in me, or you can look at Nicola and say, you know what, I don't need to spend that 18 months. I'll give you a shot now. And to her great credit, she did. So that's why it came on so quickly. So I could give her what I thought was necessary. We'd argue about it. And then we'd go what I wanted. And it seemed to work well.
One athlete who I always would have loved to have seen at 70.3 and at Kona, and I think she could have been dominant, was Emma Snowsill. Obviously had health issues. You coached her.
Yep.
How good could she have been at that longer distance?
Well, I would think before the advent of Chrissy and the new power girls on the bike, I think under the old rules, and I mean that sincerely, of that course, she would have been great. And yes, I have no doubts whatsoever. In fact, I'll tell you a little story.
Yeah.
Her first professional paycheck was at a race that I took her to in Ibiza, and I had to catch her at the start line because she tried to get off it. It's a long story, but I'll tell you about it another time. But the fact was it was 4K swim, it was 120K bike, and it was a 30K run. And I told her that if she did a great job in the early part of the race, I will pull her out at the run. And, of course, she jumped off the bike in front and got to the 5K and went to stop. And I said, you keep going. And I chased her all the way down the street. And she got third, because I know Bella Bayliss won the race, who was at that stage very dominant. And that changed her life. That's when her confidence came back. She started to believe in herself. So her actual run at the ITU is all off the back of gaining confidence that she was a real triathlete. And I can still remember Ibiza, Spain, is where I seen her change from an age group under 23 athlete into a real professional and start to believe in herself. And from that day on, I was a different Emma Snowsill. So, you know, you'll never have me say I don't think she could have went long. What I do know now is when you talk of Chrissy, when you talk of Rachel Joyce, when you talk of Carolyn Steffen, when you talk of Jodie Swallow, And now Danny, they're very powerful on the bike. They are powerhouses. And Emma was not a powerhouse on the bike. And so, you know, these girls are really, I don't think the triathlon world gives them the credit they deserve. And because of the way the course is, it gives them that strength on the bike that the others, you know, basically are going to struggle with. So from that perspective, I think Emma was and did do the long course before she became a superstar. And so, of course, I you know, I'm only a supporter of that type of thinking.
So you mentioned that with Daniela, you saw her in 04 when she went to Athens and finished seventh and, and realized that, okay, there's not a lot of upside. This is about as she had a great race. When you work with Nicola, Nicola Spirig, she was 19th in Athens and she is sixth in Beijing. In that particular case, your vision was she has upside. She can get better than sixth.
Yeah. Well, I always believed since 2007 that she win an Olympic gold medal. It was part of the DNA of why it worked in the end. That she didn't have the confidence, and she could she fed off mine that we started to work for the 212 before the 208. You know, we talked about it, and I said, I think I'll go public. And I told her she was only one spot off where I thought her best ever performance was. I thought she could have got fifth at, it's in my judgment, you know, she could have got fifth. She got sixth. And I said, next time, you know, we're going for the podium. And I purposely said the podium, because if I would have said going for the gold, it would have scared her, you know. And the only time that didn't scare her was 2 days before the race. And so that was the first time we talked about that, actually, about winning 212 was 2 days before the race. You know, we had a little banter, and she said something to me, and she said, I'm really sure I can get the podium. And I just looked at her, and I said, geez, if you're just going for the podium, I shouldn't be here. There's no need for me, because you'll do that easy. And I got a text maybe 4 hours later that said, we're both going for the same thing.
Oh, I love that. And speaking of that, I don't think I've seen many photo finishes in the history of triathlon, and especially for a gold medal. The race between Nicola and Lisa Norden became a classic. Yeah. And I think we've chatted before, and you didn't feel, even though she won the gold, it was not her best race for Nicola.
No, well, the thing was, we had a couple of problems going into the race. And again, if you look at the photo, because I'm a little bit more analytical, I was upset with the way she finished. So if she would have got second, I would have been very upset with her, because, you know, she didn't lean into the race at all. She leaned back as she crossed the finish line, rather than going for the tape, you know, like the 100-meter guys all lean in. And Lisa, to her great credit, did a marvelous job. She went straight after it. She got down, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Head down, chest for the tape. Where Nicola, I think the euphoria of I've got it, then she's throwing her hands up in the air, if you have a look at the picture, and she's leaning right back, just looking at the sky, saying, oh, my God, I've surprised myself. And that could have nearly caused, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The difference between, I think she won by officially 4 centimetres, or 2 centimetres, or something like that, I think, and, you know, winning by, you know, a foot, which would have made nobody have any doubts about the finish, was basically because she just didn't get down and get across the front of the line. So, you know, it was the closest race in, I think, Olympic history. So it was, again, a record in itself.
So when she wins in 2012 in London, was there thought then, okay, you've accomplished what we set out to do, now let's step up to longer distance? Or I know at that point she went on and lived her life. She went on and, you know, got married, had a baby, finished law school, did all the things that what I love about Nicola is triathlon is sort of part of who she is, but it isn't who she is.
Yeah, and that is exactly, you've summed it right up, Bob. And that was the frustration between me and her when we first started. I must say to you, we had plenty of fights about it, that I said, you're not a 100% athlete. And she'd say, you are 100% correct. I'm not. This is part of what I do. I want to go to uni. I want to qualify to be a lawyer. So to answer your question, those sort of decisions was taken a long time before the Olympics. We had discussions with a partner at that stage who was a great athlete himself, Rito Hugs, got world championship medals, been to 3 Olympics.
Yep.
And we decided that was going to be her swan song, you know, to win, lose, or come 30th, she was going to get on with the rest of her life. And so basically, most of us all made plans with that in mind, that this was basically the end game, and she was going to get on and they were going to get married and life carried on. So from that perspective, it was very special. Now, of course, the next morning before anybody else got up, I had her in the swim pool and we were changing a stroke, and she was sort of perplexed but still turned up, which was good because she was still dancing at 3 in the morning when I left her, and 8 o'clock that morning we're both in the pool, and I said, this is just because if you decide to change and not retire after you have a baby, if you want any chance in Rio, we have to change your swim style.
And so wait, this is the day after that she just won the gold medal.
Yes, yes. So I wanted to make the point to her in three areas. One is I still think she could have done it. Two is that we were planning for it just in case it happened. And third was that, you know, we got a bit of time together because we didn't spend any time after the race together because, you know, everybody was... she was the only gold medalist for Switzerland, so you can imagine the type of hype that she was dealing with. And we just met at the pool. We said our thank yous and whatever, and I changed the swim stroke, and then she went home and got on with the rest of her life. But I put the thought into her head, if she wanted to come back, we didn't put the thought into her head about Kona. We put the thought into her head about being the only triathlete to repeat. And that's what happened. And, you know, she then was pregnant and she had Yanis. And then, of course, I got the call, you know, I want to come back, you know. And, you know, I think I want to race again. And so basically, that's how it transformed everything and changed what we were doing and planning. And then, of course, her husband was the high-performance manager of Switzerland at that time. And they asked me if I'd be interested in having a look at Danny and see what we can do with Danny because she was struggling at that time. And so basically, Danny joined our squad at the behest of Nicola, and the dynamic duo, I would say, has dominated the sport since. So, you know, it's a nice story.
I love that. And then in the meantime, it's not like when Nicola decided to come back, she was just going to do triathlon. She ran a 2:42 marathon? She's got a lot of, and then she also has a kids triathlon series. She's a very well-rounded young woman.
Yes, and so basically when she did come back, you know, she won a couple of World Cup races. She's a mum's mum, and so what that means is she doesn't like to be away from the baby at all. And so at that stage of the game, we just said, let's do what you enjoy. So she loves running, so she did marathons. And then she did half Ironmans. And, of course, you know, we had one of those crazy Daniela moments where, you know, she was knocking the Ironman. So, you know, I said, you're not the number one person in my group, which really got up her nose. I said, well, you know, until you can win an Ironman, you can't say you've done it all. So 5 weeks later, she won Cozumel and then said, now am I the number one. She'd won everything from a sprint race to 3,000. She was the national champion that year in the 5,000 for the running, and did the marathon, went to the European Championships, which was held in Zurich, which is her hometown, so it was a wonderful experience. And so, you know, she enjoyed a sport rather than concentrate on triathlon, and then showed me that she's capable by, obviously, off the marathon training. There was method in the madness. She had it in the legs. He won Cozumel, which was just an amazing feat, and it just showed me, and she's capable of doing Kona if one day that's what we have to see now. It's Wanda, not WTC. I've been talking to WTC for 3 years. Now I'm hoping it's a different animal. She's quite prepared to go to Kona, but she's not prepared to go there when others are getting free spots and they're not triathletes. So unless they, you know, maybe, who knows, Bob? We might do a good job at the Olympics, and then the new regime might reach out like they should and say, would you like to come and do Kona? And then you might see Nicola Spurig at Kona.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's one of the things that I'm obviously a big believer in. Somebody who wins a gold medal, you want them on the starting line at Kona. You know,
I think so, Bob. They didn't last time, but no, anyway, let's hope we've gone another step.
I love it. That would be great. And who can argue that? Hey, every 4 years, if somebody wins an Olympic gold, there's only one guy and one gal. We want them on the starting line of Kona because Kona's about the very best in the world. That's what we want.
Well, I think it's also about promoting our sport. I think that's where we have to. That's why it's exciting times in our sport. We hope the new regime understands that we can be a big sport.
Yes.
You know, if you want to tell the world it's a niche sport, nobody's going to say, no, you're not, you're big. You know what I mean? And you can still remember, Bob, because back in your time, Mark Allen and Dave Scott were made big things of the Big Four. And it's still the same now because they actually invested in the best athletes and tried to, they become world icons, not in triathlon, but in sport. What they were doing was record-breaking and groundbreaking stuff. And so we had a golden era then because people knew who they were that never owned a bike. And, you know, to me anyway, we have to get back to that.
Well,
but anyway, that's
I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. So in the meantime, since Nicola won the gold medal, Gwen Jorgensen from the U.S. has become the dominant woman in the sport. And we've both seen this, that a lot of athletes can be very good between Olympics. Then other people step up on the Olympic stage. I mean, we look at back in the first ever Olympics, no one would have thought Simon Lessing, probably besides yourself, wasn't going to win that first gold medal. And we've seen that in other Olympics as well, Javier Gomez. And so with Gwen Jorgensen as the number one in the world right now, I'm assuming that fires up Nicola as a defending champion, that people are talking more Gwen than they are about her.
Well, again, as you said, she's a rather unique individual, so it really hasn't sort of gone that way. Up until last season, you know, Gwen struggled on the bike, and to her good credit of herself and her coach, they've turned her into a great triathlete. And I think she's a very worthy winner last year. It was fantastic. So, again, there is a new challenger, and but while she's number one in the world, she's not the Olympic champion. And the opportunity to become Olympic champion is in 160 days. And so Nicola's going to turn up. And if anybody thinks that she's going to be anything less than the Olympic champion in defending a title, they're sadly mistaken.
Do you look at the other athletes? Is that something where I know you analyze your own athletes, the power and everything else they're doing. Do you look at the people that you're racing against so that you have some sense of, okay, this is where we need to be at this part of the race?
Bob, I'm an ex-professional boxer.
Enough said, right? Of course you're analyzing your competition.
Exactly. But see, everybody out at the present moment, I see everybody training and everybody's biking because we're all going to drop Gwen. We're going to swim her and we're going to drop her on the bike or whatever. I've only got the only person that possibly could do that in the sport, and we're not even looking at it that way. See, I think the strategy to race Gwen is very easy. You just outrun her.
Right.
And nobody's thinking about that. They're all saying, well, we've all given up. She's just too good, and that's good. Well, you know what? That's great, but that's not how we're looking at it. I believe Nicola will outrun her, and we'll see.
So now you've got Daniela Ryf and Nicola Spierig, who are the top top Olympic athlete and the top long-distance athlete right now. And there's a possibility they might be going head-to-head in Kona this October.
Well, at some stage.
At some point they're going to be going head-to-head. So you see Nicola after the Olympics moving up.
After this Olympics?
Yeah.
I see the game plan, which is already set out, that she's going to have a family.
Right.
And then basically after that, I might get the call again, you know, but this is definitely her last Olympics in her mind.
Yeah.
But I got to say, it was her last Olympics last time in her mind at this stage of the season. And, you know, she knows, because she watches it every day, how good Danny is as well. So it's not like, you know, I'm just going to turn up and take over. That's not going to happen, and it couldn't happen in a month. She would have to prepare 18 months in advance to be ready to take the blowtorch that Danny's going to put on her body. Because if everybody thinks Danny's going to wait around for her for the run race, again, they're sadly mistaken as well. So it's one of those things that we don't have to even look at the present moment, because we'll see how the sport develops. But at the present moment, they're teammates, They work together. They don't train together. They swim in the same pool together. We swim sometimes. But what people don't realise is over the period of the last 12 months, for instance, I think Danny and Nicholas maybe trained four times outside the pool where they actually train together.
Interesting.
Because they're both very different athletes. You know, one's a very much power athlete. The other one's a speed athlete. And so, you know, we don't have any of the problems in groups where they're going after one another. You know, as I said, maybe that's a good thing that they're both Swiss. You know, we've got a nice camaraderie with our group, and then with MBE in our group, it's you know, it always adds. That's where the spark is. You know, that comes from there. It doesn't come between the Swiss rivalry. There's basically no rivalry between the girls. I'm just, you know, very humble that towards the end of my career, I have mostly the best two all-round triathletes I think's ever been in the sport. And I don't care if the sport changed tomorrow, Bob, and said, okay, it's going to be time trial for everybody, my two would not lose one night's sleep over it. So, you know, I'm proud of that fact. They're real triathletes. If I said it's a sprint race, they're both ready to go to the wall. If I say it's Ironman, they're both ready to go to the wall. And I think that's why they've been successful. You know, it's not, I've got to dodge this, I've got to move here, I've got to not do that one. They are just absolute throwback Mark Allen, real, I can do it all triathletes.
You've had, obviously, an amazing career. And it's easy to say, you know, hey, Chrissy won Ironman and all those type of world-class wins, Nicola with the gold medal. When you look back on your career, is there one, like, your proudest moment as a coach, which might not be a gold medal, it might not be an Ironman world champion, just an athlete that got way more out of themselves than even you thought that they might get?
Well, Bob, I know you're a little bit of a historian on the sport and me, but what I'm proudest of is I've taken age groupers and made them professional athletes. And it's very, very hard to do that, and I don't think anybody else in the sport does that. And, you know, a Hilary Biscay coming from where she did to do what she does and what she's still doing, you know, makes me very, very proud. We had the Wongster, who was a 14:35 Ironman, break 10 hours with a 1:15 swim. Like, you know, they're phenomenal results that make me very proud, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons the group has been successful. We still honour those people on a daily basis. That, you know, they come in and see these people struggle and work and just work their way with what little they had. And I'm quite sure they won't be disappointed in me say that. And they just followed the system, and the system works. And so, you know, that's where my heart lays to the future. Is I don't want to sell anybody anything. I just want to say to the average newbie in triathlon, you know what? There is a way. We have a system. It works for our slowest athletes, and it works for our fastest athletes. And so, you know, that's basically what we've been doing. And, you know, I've been extremely proud of the fact that we've taken James Cunnamar from, you know, obscurity to somewhere. Now we've got the next one you're going to see, write his name down, is Matty Troutman. He is going to come from an age group. He was a professional sailor. And by the end of this year, you'll be calling him a real professional triathlete, you know.
Wow.
That makes me very proud. And so, you know, I'm just pleased that I was able to come into the sport at a time when it needed direction coaching-wise. You know, you were back in the day. Everybody that started in triathlon was an ex-athlete experimenting on, or an athlete at the time experimenting on how to train.
Sure.
And that was that was it. So I come into it and come from an international coaching background. I'm sure you remember Paulie Kuru.
Of course.
He again was one of the few guys that had an international level coach at another sport. And I can remember Nitti Natula was his name,
yes,
saying, well, he's a very average athlete, but he trains properly now because what they're doing is wrong. And the only person he didn't get over the top of was Mark Allen.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, I know the guy. I watched him train. I provided swimmers for him. And he was a meticulous trainer, an absolutely meticulous trainer, Paulie Currie, when he came to Australia. And so, you know, I'm just glad that we've developed our system, not looking at triathlon for what it was. And, you know, a lot of our athletes have gained the benefit from that experience.
What's interesting is I remember having Scott Tinley on back in the day, and we were talking about, because these guys, there was no books on how to train for this thing. And he said, basically, Scott Molina, his idea was, hey, elite swimmers are swimming 30 to 40,000 meters a week, and top cyclists are riding 300 to 400 miles a week, and they're running 80 to 100. I'll just string all those together,
yep,
and I'll become good, which he did. But, you know, and Tinley basically did the same thing, because that's
yep,
what Molina was doing, and Molina was the best. Yep. But there's obviously a point of diminishing return where you can't train 40 hours a week forever.
Yeah.
Do you see, and a lot of times I see that with age groupers, they come in with, they're doing more volume than the pros are doing, plus they're balancing family and work and everything else. Is that one of the things you deal with when you are dealing with age groupers? Is I need to cut you back in terms of what
totally,
you're training.
Totally. I have not had one come into my group that is not shocked when we do our camps. They watch Nicola train, and she just swam 900 meters.
Yeah.
Like, what's that? And then we see Daniela do a 40-minute bike, and they just look at you like, are you kidding me? Are you putting this on just for the camp? And, well, people that come to our camps start to realize, because they watch the athletes do it, and then when they see that, you know, the killer sessions that you read about, Bob, they see that, and they go, wow, okay, that's the real deal. And when there's only two of them in a week, where's the rest of them? So, yes, for me, that's what I want to get out and tell people, that you don't have to do what you just talked about. As you just said, the Molina and the Tinley still prevails today.
Yes.
I can't believe it, but that's what they're doing. They're taking what the swimmers do, and we copy that. Even with techniques. Bob, even with techniques, we take the bike and we copy the bike riders. We take the run, we copy the run. Now, you know, I was just fortunate enough to come into the sport without a biking background. And so I made the same mistake for the first 6 months as a swim coach. Oh, geez, we're just going to do, you know, I'm a genius swims coach. And like, Bob, I've had 24 people go to the Olympics in swimming before I could spell the word triathlon. And I just thought, well, this will be easy for me. And then after 6 months, I realized, hang on, you need to sit back and analyze this sport. This sport is very complex. And so, you know, I suppose now we do a compromise, not only in training, but in techniques. We do the same on the bike. And not many people notice, but I had a person qualify for the 1992 Olympics in the 10K females. She ran 31:50 in 1992. So there's no triathletes got near her times, and I'm sitting here with her program. And, you know, I'm just saying I had to compromise that program to get the best out of triathlon. So, you know, for me, the biggest problem at the present moment is people are still using the old technology, which is, you know, we get our programs even for our coaching. We go and listen to the swim coach tell us how to teach the swimmers. We go to listen to the bike coach tell us how to do the bike. And then we do the same in the run. And so basically, you know, what we're trying to say is, this is what Danny does. This is what Nicola does. This is what this guy's done. This is what, you know, Greg Bennett used to do, because I know sometimes I love him, but Greg does say, you know, we did this, we did that. It was totally different. But I still see, you know, he's burned out. Like, he should be getting a pension soon, and he's still going to be racing the pro because he's looked after himself so well.
Yes.
And trained so smart that here he is still kicking all. You know, I'd be embarrassed if it was an American young guy, you know, but he is just a professional's professional. And, you know, all good luck to him, because I think it really, I just seen the other day, Craig Alexander just come back and won a race in Australia.
Exactly.
He's nearly as old as me. But, you know.
I love that.
Well, you know, that's what I'm trying to get across to the sport. You know, I'm just trying to say, take a look at the sport as the sport is. And triathlon is triathlon. It's not swim. It's not bike. And it's not run. Now, I was lucky enough after 1992, when I'd done all my experiments, to keep that as my mantra. Just keep thinking, triathlon's about triathlon. It's not about swim, bike, run. And the results have flowed from that sort of mentality.
So one of my pet peeves over the years has been I see high school kids running 100 miles a week. Coaches, it's just sort of the automatic is more is better. And the sport of triathlon is one of those things that you can use the what you learn through swimming and cycling, I think, to make you a better runner without the pounding that comes with running. Is that something that you see as well, that people just from a young age start running so much so early that they don't have that longevity in that sport, and if they incorporated more cross training in, that they actually could, you know, run better by running less?
Well, there's two ways to describe that, and one is by what our best athletes do at the present moment, that the people who come to our camp see. Nicola only runs every second day,
right.
So that's number one.
Yeah.
Danny, because she's bigger, stronger, and doesn't seem to have any bone problems, she runs one day hard, one day off the bike or easier, and then one day rest. So straight away, the two best components in the world are not banging on their body every day. They swim and bike on the off day. Now, if you think about it for a second, swimming is totally immersed in the water, so there's no pounding, there's no eccentricity. On the bike, exactly the same, there's no gravity. So they're getting a full 24 hours to 36 hours between each particular day. Now, nobody's going to accuse me of not training them hard on the run day, but we train run day, and it's hard. But then they get the rest. Now, we do that now on the basis of our girls. Our boys will run more. They'll run one day hard, one day easy. You know, you've seen that with Lucas. We're trying to build him into getting back his volume. As for juniors, I think the best way to describe why we've had such success, and if you look back through the Australian team when I was the coach there, that we kept producing juniors that made good professionals and won world titles in the Open, there'd be days where they didn't run like the pros. And that's what I can't express enough, Bob. You know, give you an example. Joanne King, 1998 Olympic distance champion. Okay?
Yep.
We're going back a bit. But
that's okay.
You know, when I started training her, for 3 months she never did further than 25 metres in the water. Because she did 5,025 before I let her go more than one lap.
Wow.
Now, if I take her to the next step,
yeah.
Loretta Harrop, who in her first World Cup went off the bike by a minute and then ran a 50 and then improved greatly 3 weeks later, because then she ran a 48 and still finished last in both. She would go to an oval for an hour and a half and run nothing more than the football pitch, moderate, medium, mad, because we were trying to develop the skill. She couldn't run. So you just can't say, here's a runner's program to this person who can't run and who's got 6 stress fractures before she turns up to your squad, because they were giving her proper, can I put that in hypotheses, proper training.
Yeah.
Well, we just don't know what's wrong with her. We give her 8400s, she breaks down. We give her 8 1Ks, she breaks down. I'm looking at them thinking, you know, who's from the other planet? The fact is that you need to train that. You need to learn those skills. And I think as juniors, my juniors used to do lots of stuff, lots of 150s, lots of 100 metres, a lot of 25 metres. Now, Bob, if I turn to an age grouper who can't swim and say, okay, I want you to go no further than 25, they look at me like I'm the Death Star.
Right.
And so I totally agree with you. I think you have to develop up skills, and that's the key, you know, and you will swim faster over 3.8 if you develop the right skill pattern and the right arm movements that's going to make your body go faster for longer. So, you know, you're just talking to the converted there. I'm a convert that, you know, you can definitely do too much, and you can do too much in the wrong area, and it stunts your ability to develop, you know. So when I see kids running marathons, I shake my head in disbelief. You know, it really worries me, because they're just running every bit of opportunity to have any speed straight out of them. So, and we see that a lot. So, you know, for me, I think the coaching is a specialised field. I'm proud of what we've done. I'm proud that we opened up and are trying to tell everybody just what we do. I don't try to lecture anybody. I'm sure you've heard people say that. I just say, look, this is our program. This is what we do. And that's what we want to show people. We just say, you know, this is the type of training we use.
If you were training a marathoner, I mean,
sure.
Nicola just ran a 2:42. So if you were training, yep, someone as a marathoner, would you train them basically using swimming and using cycling besides just running?
I would definitely be using, it depends on what skill level they have in certain aspects. So obviously if they weren't good in, for instance, I'll give you the idea, the girl I told you about in 1992, she used to be a swimmer. And so she swam three times a week and she sat on the turbo twice a week while all the triathletes were doing their hard turbo. Now she was sitting on it, we're reading a book with hardly any gears at all.
Right.
But we did that back then for a 10K runner that was never even considering doing triathlon. So, yes, I think, you know, the recovery that can be got out of sitting on a bike and just spinning, even if you don't have any tactical ability or technical ability, is a wonderful thing and should be used. And all I can say is we use it all. And we do now with Nicola with no injury. For instance, we'll, after a swim set, go over in the little pool and jog in the water. And I've heard people say to me, she's not injured. I said, no, she's just, you know, doing
she's
30
training.
Minutes. Yep, it's training, it's the heart rate's moving, and it's giving her no pounding on her body. So to me, is that detraining or is that enhancement? Well, if her heart rate's above 120, it's enhancement. But that's just my opinion.
Well, and I know from talking to running coach Bobby McGee, he was telling me that, you know, Gwen is running faster now at 5,000 than she ran in college, with a lot of her anaerobic work on the bike to avoid that pounding. So we've seen it. What I think has been a masterful job on your part, and we won't see the benefits from this for a while, is Lucas Verzbeekus, who you were kind enough to take on. Here's a young man who was a sub-4-minute miler, who won his junior world championship in triathlon and then had this horrific bike crash where he broke his back. And so the challenge of taking on someone who's used to being the best, right, whose body is totally different now, how tough has that been for you?
Well, I think it's nowhere near as difficult as this for Lucas. And so, you know, I think we have to, those that are supporting him, have to realize the depths of, you know, how desperately painful it must be for him, you know.
Yes.
And so what we've tried to do with Lucas is try to reshape his swimming to take the pressure off his injuries. We've tried to, you know, obviously you wouldn't want to change the run technique at all. But I've got to be honest with you, Bob, we're still trying to find out what the best mold is for him. He's having a lot less injury problems now. The fact that he's even competing in a triathlon is amazing to me.
Me too.
And it's amazing to you, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's amazing to the rest of the world, but it's not amazing to Lucas, unfortunately.
Yes.
And that's,
right.
That's the sad part. That, you know, I want to, you know, he's such a driven young man and wants to be great. And, you know, it's going to take some time. You know, do I think in time he can? I do. I think, but the problem is it's hard for a young boy to say, you know what, this is going to be a grind now because everything else I was so good at so quick. You know, you don't run 4 minutes unless you're dripping with talent. Well, the injuries have taken some of that away. So he's got to step up to the mark in the grind situation, which he's never done in his life before. So is he going to do that overnight because he walks in the Brett Sutton's door and, you know, well, I've got a magic wand and go ping? No, my magic wand has given him swimming, biking and running techniques that won't pull his body down as much as his old ones did and allow him to get the miles in that will see him resurface. And one day I hope win an American championship. And that's my goal. I hope it's his goal. His goal is he wants to go to the Olympics. And I think he can go to the Olympics. He'd like to try to go this one. For me, you know, I'll do whatever we can to try to facilitate that. But I believe 220, he can not only go to the Olympics, but I think he can be a player again. So that's how Lucas's story is at the present moment. He just came over and did 10 days with us, and his improvement's been remarkable. And anybody that trained with him couldn't believe it, except the only person that doesn't see it is Lucas. So, you know, that's one of the anomalies of champions. You know, they basically hold themselves to a higher account, and those of us that are supporting him, they've just got to understand that's what makes them champions. So we just try to quell the expectations and put up with the downs, because Lucas is going to have a lot more downs. He is ups over the next year or two. But I still believe that he'll come out the other side of the tunnel. truly believe it.
Do you see some of those flashes of the Lucas versus Bikus of past, maybe when he's on the track, where you go,
yes.
Oh, my God.
Every now and then, Bob, it clicks, and for 20 minutes, you can see what he's got. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the people around us see it, and that's why we're trying so hard to keep him in the sport, because he just needs time. You know, those little 20 minutes, one day is going to turn into 2 hours, and then it's going to turn into a week, and then it's going to turn into a month, and then all of a sudden, he's going to be back kicking ass again, Bob.
I love it. Hey, Brett.
So we just got to get him over this bit.
Thank you so much, one, for everything you've done for Lucas, but two, everything you've brought to the sport, the professionalism, these amazing athletes from, like you said, from Greg Bennett to Greg Welch to Emma Snowsill to Chrissy Wellington to Daniela to Nicola. You've done a ton to make the sport better, and your vision for where the sport can go is something that I agree with 100%. Our sport can be a lot bigger. It's not a niche sport. It's a sport that changes lives. It's a fountain of youth. And what other sport can you be in? One where you can be on the starting line with Nicola or with Daniela, where I can be in the same race they are in. And what other sport actually can you get better at as you get older? I can be better at 60 than I was at 30, and there's really no other sport like that, I don't think.
It's unique, Bob, in that area. It's the reason why I got into it to start with. You know, I was a swim coach, and, I just thought, where does this take people? They retire, and they've put 8 to 10 years of work into it, whereas in triathlon, it can become part of their life. And so what I think my mission is to make sure they do it moderately and don't go over the top, so it enhances their life and not makes it a misery. So, you know, that's the calling we're looking at the present moment, and I'm excited to see the change in the sport and to see if we can have a new direction.
And is the website trisutto.com?
That's it, Bob. Thank you very much.
I love it. I love it. Brett Sutton, the legendary coach, has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by Ironman U, EverySite.com, RonCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. Check out all of our interviews on iTunes or Babbittville.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our brand new newsletter, Endurance World. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.